Welcome to the Exec MBA Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Twitty, and you are listening to a new episode. And speaking of new things, it's a new application cycle. That's right. If you are planning to apply in the upcoming year, targeting an August 2021 start date, our Executive MBA Class of 2023, you have come to the right place. I was joined recently via Zoom here on the podcast by my admissions colleague, Catherine Offer, to talk a little bit more about admissions innovations and tips for candidates applying in the upcoming cycle. I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, welcome back, Catherine Offer, to the podcast for an admissions conversation. Catherine, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Brett. It's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here. What a time to have you on the podcast. We are getting ready to launch our new Executive MBA application for folks who are targeting our class of 2023. That's our class that starts next August 2021. Figured we'd have you on the podcast to help people get prepared for the application launch and the upcoming cycle. So are you ready?
Oh, I am ready. Are you ready?
I think I'm ready. Only one way to find out. Let's do this. Just to give our listeners a bit of an overview of what we're going to talk about here, we're going to talk about some of the exciting innovations for this cycle, some of the new things that we're doing. But we're going to give you a look at our Executive MBA application fee waiver, some tips for those of you who are wondering which deadline might be right for you, talk a little bit about how our application works in terms of, am I applying to a particular format or the program? We're also going to share some insights about our short answer questions, resumes, recommendations, and of course, what seems to be the most popular topic for many of the folks who I talk to on the phone, Catherine, I'm sure for you as well, standardized tests.
Yeah, absolutely. Standardized tests do take up a lot of time. So people are very curious to learn more about what they need to do.
All right. So let's start with just kind of a quick note about our application launch. As I mentioned, mid-August. So if you are listening to this podcast, great job. You are, in a good position doing your research now, learning what you need to do to be ready to apply. Our first deadline is September 10. Catherine, we have monthly deadlines starting in September, going all the way potentially till the end of June or until the class fills. How do you help candidates think about which deadline might be right for them?
Yeah, we do have a lot of deadlines, one just about every month between now and June. And all of these deadlines are for the same start date, which is in August of 2021. We like to think that this provides our applicants with a maximum amount of flexibility. My advice is to spend time putting together your strongest application, prioritize making sure your application is as thorough and complete as you want it to be before you apply, but to also work on applying earlier. In the beginning of the process, every seat is available, every scholarship dollar is available, and as we move through the different rounds, we don't have as much availability. So two somewhat conflicting pieces of advice of waiting until you have your strongest application and applying early, but I would prioritize the strength of your application over the timeline.
Great points. We offer multiple deadlines to give our busy Executive MBA applicants flexibility. We know oftentimes people's plans may shift. You may be thinking about October and ultimately the November deadline makes more sense, or maybe the December deadline. No problem. The deadlines are there again to give you flexibility. Each deadline functions as its own sort of round within this broader cycle, as Catherine mentioned. All of these deadlines are focused on one start date. So if you look on our deadlines page, which I should note has been updated and reflects the new deadlines, there's also a target interview period, a decision release date, and a deposit deadline for each round. So look at your options there, but some great tips from Catherine in terms of thinking about the timing. So Catherine, when people apply, they are applying to our Executive MBA program. This is a very common question that I get. People want to know if there's a separate application for our EMBA format or our GEMBA format, that's our Executive MBA format, or Global Executive MBA format. One of the great benefits for applicants is that it's one program, one application. There's just a question on the application, which is not binding in any way, in which you can signal your interest, whether you're interested in our EMBA format, GEMBA format, or both. But If you're admitted, you'll have a chance then at the time of accepting your offer to choose your format. So no need to choose at this time. You're applying to our executive MBA program. That's a long way of saying, you know, do your research now, but know that you don't have to make a decision until later. Catherine, how do you help people think about which format may be right for them as they're comparing our executive MBA format and our global executive MBA format?
Right. So as you mentioned, students are admitted to both programs, and then they have a few weeks before the deposit deadline to decide which format makes the most amount of sense for them. I think the question boils down to how much do you want to travel? Our executive MBA students will be required to complete at least one global residency. Our global executive MBA students will be submitting completing an additional 3 global residencies for a total of 4. And I would say if you have the bandwidth and the opportunity to squeeze in 3 extra weeks of travel, I would encourage you to look at the global executive MBA program. The trips are, I've only heard positive raving reviews from our students about their experiences abroad with the program. And so it doesn't matter if your career goal is to stay within the United States or to work globally. The global format is a great choice for anyone who is just interested in travel and seeing the world. What would you add, Brett?
I would say, first of all, our executive MBA program has never been more global than it is at this particular moment. If you go back a few years, we had 4 global residency locations. Now we have as many as 12 global residency locations that span, you know, all major continents. And, you know, I think it's such an incredible time to, you know, to sort of take in all this information. Certainly COVID has made this more complicated. But, you know, if you're thinking sort of waffling between IMBA and GIMBA, what I would suggest, and this is direct from Lottie Carr, who is our director of global executive MBA programs. Also, I should say director of global executive programs, also a friend of the podcast. She would say, if you're thinking about doing 2 global residencies, you really should consider the global executive MBA format, but you can't go wrong with either. For most people, it does come down to schedule time. Maybe some cost consideration. There's a slight cost differential between the 2 formats, but pick the format that's right for you. We have 2 formats again to give you options.
And every year we have the condition that's known as the global executive MBA fear of missing out. There are students in the executive MBA program who, after their first global trip, really wish they had gone ahead and taken the plunge to sign up for all 4.
That is very, very true. So there is some flexibility for executive MBA format students to add additional global residencies. But again, if you're thinking that you might want to do more than 1 global residency, really do consider the global executive MBA format. All right, so let's talk short answer questions. No real updates here. We have the same questions as we had last year, although there is an opportunity in the application for candidates to share more about their background, or like first generation college, or to share more about their sort of experience growing up and their home life. And Catherine, how do you encourage people to think about the short answer questions and making the most of that space?
Yeah, so my first piece of advice is not to overthink the essays. These essays are not intended to trip you up or make the application process more complicated. They're really just opportunities for us to learn more about who you are. We think very carefully about the questions we choose to ask, and so you'll see our application stems around the impact that you've made in your career, your openness to diversity and inclusion, what you want your team, your learning team, to know about you and your leadership style, because those are the things that we are honing in on through the essays. There will be time in your interview to expand on more aspects of who you are as a person, but for the essays, I would focus on just answering the specific questions that we ask, staying within the word limit, and not overthinking your responses.
All good points. The word limit is tough. Most of the short answer questions are 150 word, 200 word responses, that sort of thing. So you have limited real estate. I think that's probably the biggest challenge for candidates. Is that your thinking too?
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like candidates feel this pressure to share everything about themselves in the short answered essays, and it's just not possible. So I always say, just focus on answering the question, and then you can expand on things in the interview.
Very true. Focus on the story that you're telling as well. I think this is one of the things that I find as I talk to candidates about the short answer questions is it almost feels like people are trying to figure out what we think the right answer is mm-hmm. to the short answer prompt and question. And can't say it enough. There is no one right answer. We have seen many, many, many successful responses to our short answer questions that are very different. Some use personal examples, some use professional examples. Pick the examples that you want to share that help you tell the story about yourself that you really want to communicate to our admissions committee. That's my best tip out here. And remember to focus on you and don't focus on us as admissions committee. We really want to get to know you and the authentic version of you.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the learning team essay in and of itself, some people are more focused on sharing their professional experiences with their learning team, and some people are more interested in sharing their personal, and we don't have a preference, and I'm glad that it's varied and mixed up so that it keeps the applications fresh, and we never know what we're going to get.
It's very true. And as Catherine and I will tell you, the best thing about working with executive MBA applicants and prospective students is just the time that we get to spend with folks and really getting to know you and helping you not only consider Darden, but think about this step in your career. And also as you move through the application process, as Catherine mentioned, and we'll talk about interviews a little bit later. But, you know, the application itself is an initial introduction to you, and then the interview is an opportunity for us to get to know you a little bit better. So again, you don't have to do it all in the application. It is the sort of thing that should say, you make us sufficiently intrigued that leads the admissions committee to kind of conclude, this is somebody we'd like to talk to more. And that's where the interview comes in. So let's talk about resumes. Get a fair number of questions about how long the resume should be or what's the maximum length. I don't have that many strong feelings about this, Catherine. What do you typically advise candidates with regards to resumes?
I typically advise students who have less than 1 or 10 years of work experience to keep their resume to one page. If it goes over to two, we won't be too upset about that. So your resume is a snapshot of your work experience. It's not a place for you to list everything that you've ever done or a publication that you've ever had published. It's more an opportunity to demonstrate your career advancement, your growth, your leadership experiences, your management experiences, and your education background.
Yeah, there is a part of our application that focuses on employment history. It's more of nuts and bolts. What have you done? What was the nature of your job? How many direct reports did you have? These kinds of things. You have the opportunity to include that information for 5 positions. And so my best tip for resumes is to kind of think about how the resume works in concert with the employment history section of your application. With that employment history section there and all that information that you're sharing, your resume could be an opportunity for you to quantify your impact, show your leadership, and also potentially to highlight some of your personality. I always enjoy, this is not to be prescriptive here, it's your resume, share what you feel is important for our admissions committee to know about you. But I always enjoy seeing people's hobbies, interests, things that you're reading or podcasts you're listening to, global experiences you've had. So there is some space for that on the resume. Resume again, I don't think either of us are sticklers about resume length, but good rule shared from Catherine there about length. So let's talk about recommendations now. We only require one recommendation. We will accept up to 3. Oftentimes our applicants are wondering, Catherine, well, who should I pick for my recommender? What do you advise?
Great question. So the questions that the recommender is going to will be asked are going to be centered around your leadership orientation, your strategic thinking, your initiative, your communication skills, your ability to work well on teams. The recommender will be asked in what context they know you, how your performance compares to others in similar roles, and then to describe a piece of constructive feedback they have given you and how you responded. So based on those questions, the strongest recommendation letters typically come from a direct supervisor. So we encourage you to think about having someone that you report to writing your recommendation letter. but there are always reasons why that's not a good choice. So I always say at the end of the day, this is where your judgment comes in, and you need to make the best call for yourself and for the strength of your application. But if you do not have a direct supervisor write your recommendation letter, I would include a note in the additional comments section around your choice of recommender. What else would you add, Brett?
Well, I think that's great advice. And I want to talk a little bit more about the additional comment section. But before we kind of get into that, I also say, occasionally we'll get people asking, what if I want to have two recommenders or three? That is fine. Technically, you can. But just make sure that those additional recommenders are adding something new to the insights about you and your overall application. We only require one, and we actually made that decision very intentionally a couple of years ago, finding that we were really kind of getting the information that we need as an admissions committee from that one recommendation. But as Catherine notes, it is up to you. It's your application. These are your recommendations. So someone who knows you well, preferably someone who supervised you. And there is a good opportunity to use the additional comments section to help us understand your recommender choices. What other suggestions do you offer applicants, when it comes to using the additional comments section? Catherine, what are some reasons to use that section of the application?
Right. And actually, I have one other thought around recommendation letters. Someone who might want to have more than one recommendation letter might be somebody like an entrepreneur who doesn't have a direct supervisor. They might want to ask someone who is maybe a client of theirs who can speak to one aspect of their work experience, and then maybe an investor who can speak to another. So those are two different perspectives, and people will not be saying the same thing. Other reasons for using the additional comments section would be perhaps any grades in your undergraduate experience that you felt like were outliers, and there were other circumstances in your life that contributed to a weaker academic performance that a reader of your application wouldn't know just by looking at your transcript. Another choice would be to explain any gaps in your work experience, if there are some on your resume, so you can tell the reader what's going on. Usually these issues are not big deals as long as you kind of explain and let the readers know what's going on.
Yeah, I always tell people, if there's anything, when you sort of step back from your application, think about it holistically, somebody who doesn't know you, is there something that we might have a question about or that is ambiguous or not on its face clear to us what was happening during that period? That's a great use of the additional comments section. You don't have to provide a ton of information there, but just a little context can go a long way. And again, this is your sort of initial introduction to you, and a little bit of information there explaining those kind of things that Catherine mentioned can be super helpful. All right, so diversion to additional comments, coming back now to talk about standardized tests. So we have really two options for candidates applying to our executive MBA program. You can submit a test waiver request or take a standardized test. Catherine, how do you encourage candidates to think about which option may be right for them?
Yeah, great question, Brett. So the admissions evaluation is certainly holistic. We're looking at a number of different aspects of your application before determining admission. We do need to see academic aptitude when you're applying to come to school. And so we will look at your undergraduate transcript. And if you do not think that your undergraduate transcript is a true reflection of the type of student that you are today, a standardized test score can be a strong way to show us how you're performing in a testing environment in 2020. So I think that would be a good choice. Also, a standardized test score can be a part of the scholarship decision process. So if you're really interested in receiving some form of merit-based scholarship, a standardized test score can help. And it's just, it's another way to kind of round out your application and show your academic aptitude as well as your quantitative aptitude. So perhaps if you are maybe a liberal arts major and you want to show the admissions committee that you have a strong quantitative aptitude, then a standardized test can help with that in addition to work experience and other things.
All great tips. You're right about the recent data point. You know, standardized tests typically is taken for most people in close-ish proximity to when they're applying, if not sort of right in time. So that gives us a recent data point. And as Catherine notes, in our merit scholarship process, one of the criteria that we do consider is standardized tests. So having a standardized test score can just sort of expand, give us another data point to consider. It is a holistic process, so we're going to be looking at everything and test scores. For those candidates who submit a test score are one, you know, certainly one part of that whole. As mentioned, we do have a test waiver request as part of our application. So if you're kind of thinking about your options and you say, you know what, based upon my background, sort of educational and professional, I think I might have a strong case for a test waiver. You can and are certainly welcome to submit a test waiver request with your application. That is as simple as sort of going in the test score section of the application, indicating yes in the checkbox that says I'd like to be evaluated for a test waiver. And then there's a sort of field there, a text box, Catherine, where candidates can highlight aspects of their background they feel are relevant to that evaluation. What do you encourage people to share there?
Anything like a professional certification, like the CFA or the CPA, additional coursework that they have taken that's in a quantitative fashion. You could also share and highlight an undergraduate or a master's degree GPA in performance. Any type of significant amount of analytical work experience that you have is another thing to highlight. So those are the top things that come to mind. What else would you add, Brett?
Yeah, I think those are all good things. I mean, as you noted earlier, really as an admissions committee, we are trying to get a sense of your readiness for the experience at Darden. You know, Darden is known for being challenging, and you also will have required quantitative courses in the core curriculum. So things like finance, accounting, global economics, decision analysis, we want to make sure we're putting you in a position to be successful. So as you are thinking about framing that waiver request, you know, consider all the things that Catherine mentioned, and also consider sort of our broader goals in admissions committee as we, you know, as we ultimately process and evaluate that request. I will note that there are four decision outcomes for candidates who apply to our executive MBA program. So if you are considering a test waiver request, these are particularly relevant as you kind of think about what your next steps might be. So let's imagine you've submitted a waiver request, and as we noted, that review process is concurrent with the evaluation of your overall application. We provide an update regarding the outcome of the waiver request review at the time of decision. And so as noted, there are four decision outcomes. You could be admitted, so your waiver request was granted, no further action required. You can receive a conditional offer of admission, meaning that your waiver request was not granted, but ultimately we'd like to offer you conditionally a seat in our class. And that offer condition is typically, it's an action item that you have to complete to receive a full offer. So oftentimes that's something like take two online courses in the areas of accounting or finance, could be take a standardized test. It's really what is set by our admissions committee. And typically candidates have about 3 weeks to satisfy the offer condition. You'd be placed on the waiting list, in which case, if you submitted a waiver request, being on the waiting list means, you know, ultimately that you probably want to think about ways to strengthen your application. So standardized test or additional quantitative work, coursework could be ways of strengthening the application. And of course, the fourth decision is deny, which is a final decision. So a lot of detail there about the ultimate decision outcomes, but do just kind of want to give you the landscape as we are evaluating these waiver requests and providing an update at the time of decision as to what you might be expecting if you decide to go the waiver request route. So two options, you know, think about your application, think about your background, and we encourage you to choose the option that feels the best for you. All right. So Catherine, we covered a lot of ground here. I think we've got one topic, or maybe two topics left to discuss. I want to start with, as we kind of round things out, I'm going to start with a topic that I think is probably our favorite part of the application process, interviews.
Pro tip, if you interview with Brett Twitty, be prepared to talk about what books you are reading and what podcasts you are listening to. And it doesn't hurt to mention the Executive MBA podcast.
I should note, we appreciate our listeners of the Exec MBA podcast, but we understand there are a lot of podcasts in the world. So I do find it interesting to know about your hobbies and interests. That is one of my favorite questions in the interview process. So as all of this may be leading you to conclude, gosh, it sounds like the interviews may be more conversational in nature. That is 100% true. We do not do behavioral interviews at the Darden School. These are conversational interviews, an opportunity for you to tell your story. So as we've talked about here, this is about your narrative and what you want to know about who you'll be in our Executive MBA community, both in the classroom, outside of the classroom. An interview is a great way for you to give us a sense of that. Catherine, what are your top interview tips?
Yeah, as you mentioned, our interview is very casual. It's a conversation. We are trying to get to learn more about who you are and why you're interested in the program. So my biggest tip is to know your story. Be able to speak to where you have been and where you are going, how the Darden Executive MBA program fits into your plan, why you're interested in Darden's program over some of the other Executive MBA programs. But ultimately, it should be a pleasant, enjoyable conversation where you're able to share more about your story and how we can be a part of helping you get to where you want to be.
All true. One of the things that I always underscore with candidates is, I think people get tired of hearing about the sort of idea of a holistic review, but really as an admissions committee, we're trying to understand who you'll be as a classmate, as a teammate, the perspective you'll bring to the classroom, what kind of person you'll be in terms of the extracurricular aspects of the program. This is not a transactional Executive MBA experience. People are very engaged both in the classroom as case method school. So you're going to have to participate and be part of a discussion, but also outside the classroom. At this point, I think we have 9 or 10 Executive MBA student organizations, and it's a really active group in terms of, social stuff and just building relationships. And so we want to know that's what you're looking for as well. And so, yes, academic readiness is part of what we're focused on. But being successful at the Darden School or being successful in our Executive MBA program specifically, it's also about these kind of cultural questions too. And so an interview is a great way for us to get a gauge on some of these things. Does that resonate with you, Catherine?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that you were talking about really made me think about the culture of the school. And I think it could always be advantageous to take the time to talk to one of our current students before the interview, because I think that they'll be able to help you learn more about the program and the culture, and that will carry over well in your interview.
Absolutely. And the great thing about our students and alumni as well is that they are eager to share about their experience. This is a group of people who, as I mentioned, are engaged while they're in the program and oftentimes also post-graduation. So the podcast is a great resource to hear more of these stories. Certainly, we also have a blog, Discover Darden, where we share student profiles, connecting with a student or an alum as you're kind of kicking the tires, thinking about the program and what you want to get out of your MBA experience. Always, always good to do. So a little more technical than interviews, but we do actually have an Executive MBA application fee waiver offer out there for applicants applying to our Executive MBA program in this cycle. Catherine, do you want to share a little bit more about the details of this fee waiver offer?
Sure. So we offer an application fee waiver, which is equivalent to $250 for people who do a couple of things. You can schedule a conversation with either Brett or myself through our website, or attend a coffee chat with a group of other prospective students and either Brett or myself. And so one of those two activities will qualify for 50% of the application fee waiver. And then the second piece is that you attend one of the webinars that we will be hosting over the next couple of months.
Yeah, it's just that easy. A two-step process. We offer, individual conversations as well as these group chats to kind of give you some options, right? Some people prefer the one-on-one setting. other people want to spend some time with fellow prospective students, hear other people's questions, and kind of have a little bit more of that group dynamic. So you have that option. And we also have a number of online events. So we do webinars, and we also do some networking events, and we'll do mock classes and things like that. So we really are trying to get you to engage with us. We find this to be a great way, not only for you to learn about the program, but also for us to learn about you. As you probably picked up on what Catherine shared, you get to spend a lot of time with both Catherine and myself, as well as other members of the executive MBA community. But the reality is we love that kind of personal interaction. We know this is a really big decision for you, and we want to make sure you have the information that you need, but also we want to kind of help you think about this next step. Our roles are not really sales roles. We're more kind of on the counseling end of things, where people are kind of coming and saying, hey, this is what I'm thinking about. Do you think Darden might be a good fit? And so these kind of conversations and online events are great ways to gather more information.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to echo, Brett and I really do enjoy having these conversations. So if you're kind of toying with the idea of applying, trying to figure out if it makes the most amount of sense for you and your goals, we welcome the opportunity to chat with you further about it.
Yeah, and as you will likely pick up on if you listen to a number of these interviews, the consideration process for many executive MBA students in our program and undoubtedly other programs out there is a longer one, right? So if you find yourself that you've been thinking about this a while, or you're just kind of getting started with things and you're not sure where to go to kind of talk with somebody, conversation's a great use of that. Coffee chat's a great option out there too. We're here to kind of meet you where you are. So, Catherine, we've come to the end of this podcast episode. I mean, we could probably keep talking about the application process for another couple hours. I'm not sure that that's what our listeners want, but it does give us like a wrap-up opportunity here to share any final tips or suggestions for our applicants, you know, planning to apply this cycle. What would you share?
I would echo my earlier advice to talk to members of our community. Listen to the podcast, the students sharing their stories, reach out to students in the program and ask them what the program has done for them, how they have changed in the program, how their leadership has changed, how their management has changed, and how their career prospects have changed. And give yourself patience as you're kind of moving through this process. It can take a little bit of time, and try to enjoy the ride.
Yeah, absolutely. And the only tip I would share, and we've covered a lot of ground here, and sort of, again, echoing maybe something I shared previously, is get engaged with us. We are a team that really enjoys building relationships with prospective students and applicants. Ideally, by the time someone's applying, we've at least had a conversation with them, maybe seen them on a webinar, or for an online event, and we've really had an opportunity to engage. And so we got a lot of ways for you to do that, so take full advantage. Catherine, always a pleasure having you here on the podcast. You know, we got to do this again sometime. I'm sure there will be another opportunity to talk about the executive MBA application process in the coming months.
Absolutely. And maybe next time we can talk about what we're reading.
I guess next time we will have to talk a little bit more about books. And that was my admissions colleague, Catherine Alford, here on the Exec MBA podcast. As always, if you have any comments, suggestions, requests, anything you'd like for us to cover, we're all ears. We can be reached at exec, that's E-X-E-C, MBA at darden.virginia.edu. Until next time, stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.